sack in hand, Lucas ran after the big man. Some folk at least had escaped. Over by the fence, well clear of the fire, a group sat huddled, while someone crouched beside them offering water. He did not see Jorgis among them. A door. Not yet a fire. The big man broke it down with a powerful kick and headed inside. Lucas followed. Gods! It was hot. The air was thick with smoke. It was hard to see, hard to draw breath. He battled forward, following the other man who was shouting, "Anyone there?" Lucas lost sight of him in the haze, called out in his turn, "Father? Where are you? Anyone?" He was choking over the words. Not far off, there was a thump as something fell. Just as the big man reappeared, heading back out with a limp form in his arms, there came a weak cry. "Lucas, over here!" "Father, still alive." As he made his way through the smoke, near blind and wheezing like an ancient, something flashed above him, and a fresh shower of sparks descended. Lucas batted them away. On and on, he had made a promise. Hands out in front of him, he moved forward. "Where are you? Call out!" But Jorgis did not answer. From the doorway, someone shouted, "Get out of there, quick! It's all going up!" 3 steps, 3 more, and there was Jorgis, slumped in a corner, his wrists and ankles hobbled. Lucas sucked in a breath. Gods, his chest hurt. Why did it hurt so much? His knife. Where was his knife? "Father, promise. Out, quick!" He crouched by Jorgis, no breath to spare for his words. His father held out his bound hands and Lucas severed the ties, now the ankles. The smoke was thicker. He cut by feel alone, praying that he would get it right. And Jorgis was free, but he did not rise. "Father, quick! We have to get out right now!" No response. Lucas took hold of his father, trying to haul him to his feet. Jorgis was a dead weight. "Can't stand. Go, son. Save yourself." Something smashed down behind Lucas. He did not turn to look. "Here, help me a bit." He'd lifted enough goats and other creatures over the years to have the knack of this. "Arm up around my shoulders. That's it. This might hurt." A haul, a twist, then the back-breaking rise to his feet, wobbling, staggering, his father's weight across his shoulders. Finding balance, his flame sheeted across the room, and the heat was an oven, a bonfire, a funeral pyre. "Good. Now we get out of here." 9. Stasia. A nightmare. If only she'd got up sooner. If only she'd known. Flip had woken her with a not-so-gentle peck to the ear. Stasia had smelled smoke, looked out and seen the flames, then dressed in a rush, making it clear Flip must stay home for her own safety. She'd run all the way down to the settlement until the heat was in her face and the screams and wails were crowding her thoughts, and she knew she was too late to stop this, too late to do anything but help deal with whatever came next. Up by the barn, nobody was saying much, apart from things like, "Drink this," or "Show me your arm," or "This might hurt, try to keep still." She should have known, but she had known. The vision had shown her this, the eerie light, the veiling smoke, the folk in pain, the conflagration. She should have done something. She should have told someone. But how could she have done that without the community turning on her? Good people did not perform rituals, so most folk believed. Decent people did not conjure visions. To do so and to have the vision come true was to work dark magic. Perhaps to be held responsible for whatever unfolded, as if the seer brought the vision to reality. People knew she'd learned the art of storytelling from her grandmother, but the skill of scrying had been taught in secret. Grandmother had made sure Stasia understood the perils of making this skill public knowledge. Local folk and the commander's men were working side by side, almost indistinguishable in the strange light. Fire had devoured the barn. Whether there had still been prisoners in there, she did not know. She joined the workers in their grim tasks, not speaking to anyone unless she must, nodded in response to the question, "Can you help me with this?" Shared the weight of an unconscious man with one of the guards, all the way to the hall, where they passed their burden over to the village women who were dealing with the injured. Helped another man to walk the distance. his arm around her shoulders as he hobbled along beside her. He could hardly bear to put his right foot on the ground. He'd fallen, he told her, while running up to the fire with buckets of water. He kept on talking, blaming himself for spilling the water and for not taking care and now for wasting folks' time with what might only be a sprain, until Stasia lost her hard-won composure and told him to save his breath. She'd seen Alexis giving orders. Where was the commander? And men carrying away bodies, not to the hall but to some other place. Bodies disfigured by burning. Bodies whose identities she could not even begin to guess at. She hadn't seen Jorgis anywhere. She hadn't seen Lucas. Another trip. Another man to help down to the hall. One of the locals this time. Oscar was around her own age. He was one of Christina's many admirers. Not burned, but struggling to breathe, and so weak he could barely stand on his feet. He needed someone on either side, or to be carried. But although he was of fairly slight build, she was growing tired. Could she perhaps put him over her shoulders? No, not sensible while he could hardly draw breath. She glanced around, wishing Lucas was there. Need help? It was the big man, Mattis, walking to her out of the smoke like some warrior from an old tale. Though this warrior was exhausted and sad, it was written all over his face. Stasia nodded. On a night like this, differences must be set aside. He's having trouble breathing. Caught in the smoke too long, I think. Could you help carry him? I'll take him. Mattis scooped Oscar up without apparent effort, cradling him across his body as a person might hold a child. Thank you. I'll... She looked around. Someone else was sure to need her help. Walk with me. The survivors are all out now, and I want to talk to you. So she did, helping to steady Oscar when they went over rough ground. Mattis said nothing until they were well clear of the barn. Your friend, the goat herd. He got out alive, but he's hurt. I thought you'd best know that before you see him down there. Stasia froze for a moment. Lucas? But he was free. I heard they'd let him go. We'd best keep walking. Tell me, she went on, keeping pace with him, though part of her wanted to run, to be there right now, to see for herself. Your Lucas was a hero. He came to help fight the fire, and he went into the barn to rescue his father. Everyone else had given up by then. The place was full of smoke and starting to collapse. He got his father out. Both of them were burned, and the older man has other injuries. She made some sort of sound, and Mattis went on. I'm sorry, Stasia. We have one fellow with some healing skills, and he will do all he can to help. Burned, she echoed in a voice like a crow's. How badly? Mattis stopped briefly to adjust Oscar's weight in his arms, then moved on. We'll check down at the hall. After he carried his father out of the fire, Lucas collapsed. Another silence. They were lucky to get out alive, Stasia. For a moment she was speechless. Feelings flooded through her, warring with one another. Rage rose to the top. Where was the commander when this happened? This is on his head, and on yours. Why did you come here? Your kind knows nothing but destruction and ruin. This time the silence drew out so long she thought he was not going to answer. Then he said, Rihard, the commander, was otherwise occupied, or so I'm told. Had he been sleeping in his usual quarters, he might have perished in the fire, as others did. Words rushed to her mouth, bitter as bile. I wish he had perished. He deserves to die for what he has done. She made herself swallow them. As for myself, Mattis said, I answer to Master Alexis, and through him to the ruler. I caution you against making such comments where others can hear them. He was overtaken by a sudden fit of coughing and needed to put Oscar down. Stasia moved to support the injured man, who stood shakily, his hand on her shoulder. Watching Mattis as he bent over, trying to clear his lungs, she knew this was no ordinary cough. Smoke, she said. You were in there too. The spasm passed. Mattis wiped a hand across his mouth. I got a couple of men out, yes. Saw your friend heading in, tried to warn him. But he was set on saving his father. Brave lad. They got Oscar to the hall. Hawkman was there, apparently in charge. Stasia felt relief that the commander was still nowhere to be seen. Women were busy with blankets, water skins, rolls of cloth for bandages. The benches where folk would sit for a meeting had been moved to the sides, and the space was full of pallets. Almost all were occupied. There was a smell. Blood. Dirt. Sweat. Smoke. A couple of women were moving among the injured, speaking quietly to those who could hear, listening to those who could respond, checking on those who lay limp and silent. And one of the commander's men was kneeling by a pallet at the far end, with Christina beside him. A glance told Stasia the person lying there was not Lucas, but his father. What to do? Where to go?
You could help.
Mattis still stood beside her, though he had passed Oscar over to another man who was steering him to an empty pallet. How many of these folk would die right here, lacking the expertise of a physician? Me? Yes, she could carry heavy things, run with messages, fetch water from the well, but she was no healer.
You tell a good story. In times of trouble, that helps.
When a man's in pain, when he's scared, when he has to wait, not knowing what's coming. He was right, of course. But how did he know she told stories? Oh, he'd been outside the door when she told the tale of the Amber Owl, thinking only the commander and Hawkman could hear. Mattis?
Yes.
Could you find out where they've put Lucas? The big man nodded and left her. Stasia forced down the urge to rush off in search of Lucas herself, to find answers when there were no answers. Razma was not here with her husband. Perhaps Lucas was back home under her care, or maybe she was out searching for her son. Stasia moved between the pallets, stopped beside a man who was reaching blindly upward, not a villager, one of them. Right now, that didn't make any difference. She crouched down beside him, took his hand in hers. It will be all right, she murmured, hoping it wasn't a lie. You're safe here. Just wait a bit. I'm scared. Like a child, but with a rasp in his voice. This was surely another affected by the smoke. My chest hurts. She glanced over to the spot where Alexis was now conferring with some village elders, Vidas among them. Outside, someone was wailing. Shut it out, she told herself. You can't do everything. But perhaps there was one thing that might ease this man's suffering, at least a little. Can you sit up if I help you? You might be able to breathe more easily. Good. Well done. He gripped her hand more tightly, as if afraid she might leave him. She settled by him, helping him stay upright. Do you know the tale of the brave soldier and the giant frog? His lips twitched. Perhaps that was a smile. Once upon a time. She moved from one man to another, keeping her voice soft, pushing down the need to run, to scream, to curl up with her hands over her ears and wish it all away. She told tale after tale, held the hands of the fearful, the suffering, the dying. It was hard to shut out the sounds of pain and distress. She tried not to look beyond the man she was comforting, tried not to see the moment when a blanket was drawn over a limp body, covering even the face. Time stretched out, impossible to measure. Women came in and out, some helping to tend to the injured, some bringing supplies, some seeking out a husband, a father, a brother, a son. Men came in and out, some to speak to Hawkman or any of the guards, some to collect one of those covered forms and carry it out of the hall. The man she'd seen earlier, tending to Jorgis, must be the healer Mattis had mentioned. He went around to everyone in turn, examining injuries, speaking to the women in attendance, conferring with Alexis. Stasia finished a tale. This man had burns to his feet. He would not be marching with his fellow guards again. Agnese came and applied poultices, wrapping the wounds in linen, speaking kind words as she did so. She acknowledged Stasia with a nod. Mattis had been gone a while. There was a knot of dread in Stasia's stomach. Perhaps the big man had been caught up in other things and had not had time to look for Lucas. But her mind showed her other pictures, dark ones. Christina was still in the hall, sitting beside Jorgis.
She had applied some kind of salve to her father's wounds, then bandaged them. She must know something. Would Lucas's sister be so calm if she, too, did not know where he was? She should go and ask. But Christina wouldn't want to be bothered by her. When had the folk of Hartwood ever really wanted her, unless there was hard work to be done? Stasia thought of Flip, all alone in the cottage. There was a powerful longing in her to feel the familiar weight of the little dog on her knee, to be warmed and comforted by her touch. Shut it down, Stasia, she ordered herself. To bring Flip to her at such a time was to put her friend at risk. Never mind that Flip in bird form could have gone searching more or less unobserved. Never mind that Flip might have found Lucas swiftly. She would wait. Or she would make herself go and speak to Christina. Now. She got to her feet, cramped from so long sitting on the floor, made her way carefully between the pallets, heading for the spot where Jorgis lay. Wondered if, the moment she said Lucas's name aloud, she would dissolve into tears in front of all these people. But before she could reach Christina, there was Mattis. He went first to Alexis. The two conferred briefly, then Mattis turned toward Stasia. What message her face held, she could not imagine. But he moved to one side of the hall and beckoned her over. People were watching. Agnese, Christina, others. Disapproval was written all over them. What did they imagine? That she had made friends with the enemy? That she was trading secrets? If Mattis shouted at her and marched her away, would they think good riddance? He spoke quietly, his words only for her ears. Some of the injured were taken to a smaller barn further to the south. Your friend is among them. Alexis is sending our healer there now. Can I go and see him? The words were out before she could stop them. How bad are his burns? I don't have that information yet. The commander has claimed that place as his temporary headquarters. Mattis's voice was barely a murmur. You shall go home. She felt as if she were being pulled in all directions at once, though she stood perfectly still. Breathe, Stasia. You need to tell his sister, she made herself say. She indicated Christina, who was still looking her way. Alexis will speak to her. Stasia, I strongly advise you to go home now. I'll find someone to escort you. A scream from just outside, a jarring, tearing sound. The door slammed open, and in strode the commander, with a woman following. Her mouth open wide, her hands clinging to his tunic, so she was half dragged after him. Her face was a mask, a thing from an old tale of grief and fury made real. Her shrieking made Stasia's heart clench tight in terror. It was Irina. Irina of the orderly bakery, the calm manner, the steady, quiet work. What could have done this? Only one thing, Stasia thought. Only one terrible, unthinkable thing. Irina held on until two guards peeled her off the commander and restrained her. Still the words flooded out. You killed my son! You killed my Thomas! Not even 12 years old! A child! You are a menace, a vile curse, torturer, murderer! You have ripped out our hearts! The commander struck her in the jaw with his clenched fist. Pinioned as she was by her two captors, she could not avoid the blow. Stasia startled forward. Mattis laid a restraining hand on her arm. Irina sucked in a laboured breath, squared her shoulders. I will not be silenced. She spoke through sobs, but still she met the commander in the eye. I speak for all the women of Hartwood. You have brought nothing but evil to this place. If your mother could see you now, she would regret the day she gave you birth. He struck her again, harder this time, and she sagged between the two guards. Commander! It was Alex's voice, perfectly calm. I'll deal with this. He moved toward the group with steady purpose. I knew that woman was a troublemaker. Take her away. Put her under guard. Leave her to consider her actions overnight. The commander spoke as if he had not heard Alexis. As his guards took Irina out,
He dusted off his tunic as if to remove any trace of her and folded his arms. He cast his gaze around the hall. Mattis stepped in front of Stasia as if to shield her, but she didn't want his protection. She didn't want to hide away. It was time to be seen, time to be heard. Never mind that more guards were coming into the hall, perhaps drawn out by Irina's screams, perhaps following the commander's lead. She stepped away from Mattis and met the commander's eye across the rows of pallets. Let him listen. Let him hear. "That woman, as you call her, is a respected elder of this village. You and your men have been fed all this time because she's worked herself to exhaustion baking for you. Is what she said true? Has Thomas been killed?" The commander opened his mouth to respond, but Alexis was quicker. "Sadly, that is true. There was a young boy among the dead, killed by a fall of burning timber. A freak accident, which we very much regret. I believe this was the baker's son." Tears stung Stasia's eyes. That sweet boy, a good son, full of such promise. This was too big, too sad, too terrible to speak of in anything but a story. "Once upon a time," she said, somehow finding a voice that would reach every ear in the hall, "a monster came to a peaceful settlement. What little the folk owned, the monster broke or spoiled or burned. Even the trees were cut down. Nobody knew why he was doing it. Nobody wanted him there. But they could not drive him away, not even when their sons and brothers and fathers were maimed or killed by the terrible work he forced them to do." "What is this nonsense?" roared the commander. He seemed about to charge straight at Stasia, even if it meant striding across the rows of pallets with their sad occupants, but Alexis put a hand on his arm, and a guard did the same on his other side. Stasia went on. "The local folk could not fight him. He had lackeys at his bidding who would frighten and beat and starve those who spoke out against him. So the villagers tried being kind. They baked him delicious bread. They slaughtered their goats and sheep so he and his men could eat roast meat, even though that meant lean years ahead for the farmers. They built a place for the monster and his lackeys to sleep in and be sheltered from the rain. They did the work of destruction that he ordered, and every night they came home weary and hurt and despairing. Some died in accidents, some died by fire, even children died. What did the monster want? A treasure that was so far away, so hard to reach, that more and more folk would fall in the monster's pursuit of it. This treasure was known of from ancient tales. Who knew whether it really existed? The tales told of spirits that haunted the forest, their cries enough to freeze a man's blood in his veins. They spoke of uncanny folk living high in the hills, folk who could make trees walk and cause rivers to rise and fall at will. And everyone knew the forest was full of hungry wolves and bears. The monster must surely be out of his wits to think of going into its heart, even if such a journey were possible. Everyone in the village would be dead, and their lovely home a wasteland before a way to that treasure could be found. What were the people to do? Who could help them?" The hall had fallen eerily quiet. Mattis had not moved from his position beside her, though she sensed the tension in him. He was ready to act at an instant's notice. From across the sea of pallets, the commander glared at her, red-faced. The silence drew out, until he said, "Well, how does the tale end?" Stasia held his gaze. If only she could see into his mind the way she'd be able to do if he were one of those wolves or bears or a dog or a bird. If only she could understand why. "Only you can make the ending, sir." She kept her voice calm, though the drumbeat of her heart was strong and fierce. "It is your story, and it is not yet finished." The commander drew a shuddering breath.
She expected him to shout again, but he simply turned to Alexis and said, "You told me you'd deal with it. So deal with it. Get her out of here. Lock her up where she can't cause any more trouble. The girl's out of her wits. Needs to be put away for life, if you ask me." By her father's pallet, Christina rose gracefully to her feet. "She speaks for all of us," she said. And if her voice was shaky, her gaze was not. "She speaks the truth." Grey-haired Agnese stepped forward from the bench where she'd been cutting cloth for bandages. "She speaks the truth." Then, one by one, every woman in the room stood and faced the commander, echoing those words. The hush that followed was profound. The commander broke the silence. "Take her away," he rapped out, staring at Alexis. "You see what she's doing, stirring folk up with her stupid stories. Get her out of here." Stasia brushed away sudden tears. When Mattis took her arm to guide her to the door, she did not resist. She was suddenly too tired to argue, too tired to attempt an escape, even when they were out in the open. She stood waiting while some kind of silent communication happened between Mattis, Alexis, and the young, fair-haired guard who had helped hold the commander back when he seemed about to charge at her. That man was familiar. She thought he'd been there when she calmed the horse, another of Alexis's men. They took her only as far as the bakery. The door was not barred. Inside, the place was still warm from the day's work. There was no sign of Irina. "You'll stay here for tonight," Alexis said. "I'll put guards on both the doors. I want your promise that you won't try to escape. If you won't give that, we'll have to restrain you in some way." Stasia nodded. She stood still while Mattis lit lamps. The other guard walked around as if checking for hidden assailants. She wanted to see Lucas. She wanted to know if Irina was all right. She needed Flip, but there was no point in asking. Perhaps if she did what they wanted now, they'd let her go home when the sun rose. "Your little dog," said Mattis, "all right on her own up there?" Would he go and fetch Flip for her if she asked? Maybe yes, but she didn't want anyone inside her cottage. "She'll be all right until morning." The men exchanged another look. She could not read it. She was so tired that things were starting to blur before her eyes. "Get some rest," Alexis said. "You'll be safe here. Mattis, Pavel, stay alert." And with that, he was gone. Mattis stationed himself by the main door of the bakery, first bolting it from the inside. The other guard, Pavel, took up a post by the back door. It seemed neither planned to sleep. "Don't you need rest, too?" "We're trained to cope without. Not forever, but for long enough. Go on. Do what you need to do. Wash, sleep. We won't disturb you." The habits of the bakery died hard despite everything. A bucket of water stood ready near the stove. Stasia washed her hands and splashed her face. Thinking of Irina, thinking of poor Thomas, she built up the remnant of the fire, boiled a kettle, brewed tea. Tea was good when you were tired out and your thoughts were full of darkness. More from habit than anything, she got out 3 cups and filled each. "There's tea, if you want," she said, taking her own cup with her as she retreated to Irina's sleeping quarters, which was screened from the working area by a curtain. A proper all-over wash and some fresh clothes would have been welcome, but the pump was outside and she wasn't going to ask for permission. As for relieving herself, there was a pot in the corner for the purpose. She would empty it in the morning. Small sounds came to her as she lay on Irina's shelf bed, feeling the ache of utter exhaustion in her body. The clink of cups, Mattis's deep voice, and Pavel's lighter one and muted conversation. Well, they'd locked the place up. They hardly needed to stand at the doors all night, though there was a monster out there. It wasn't only in the story. Thomas was dead. She couldn't get her mind around that. Then there was Lucas, who might be all right and might not. Jorgis, a respected leader in the village, unable to stir or speak a single word, it seemed, even with the commander a few paces away roaring his anger. And Christina, the village beauty with her delicate embroidered creations, standing up like that, speaking out when she knew what the cost might be. Agnese, a quiet grandmother, the other women. They had all supported her. But for nothing. The commander was deaf to their voices, deaf to a reason. I'll be home in the morning, she thought. Home with Flip. She imagined walking into the forest with the little dog by her side, moving on soft feet under the towering trees, hearing nothing but the song of the wind and the whisper of the grasses. No commander, no guards, no people at all. Just herself and Flip and Hartwood. 10. Stasia. For a few hours, she slept like the dead. Voices woke her. She sat up, still groggy. The high windows of the bakery showed faint light. Dawn must be near. Mattis was talking to someone beyond the dividing curtain. The other voice was not Pavel's. Was that Alexis? What was he doing here so early? Half awake, she struggled to catch their words. Something about moving quickly. Something about a cart. Horses. Names of places. Some she knew. Sweetwater. Vita's Hope. Some she had never heard of. Could it be that the commander had given up his ridiculous mission and was withdrawing his forces from Hartwood? Had the destructive fire finally convinced him the cost of his venture was just too high? Or was that too much to hope for? As the vile memories of yesterday returned to her, Stasia got out of bed. She wished she had not slept in her clothes, though what alternative was there under the circumstances? All too aware that she was grubby, dishevelled and still half asleep, she drew aside the curtain and stepped out into the bakery. The three men standing in conference by the table fell instantly silent. Mattis, Pavel, Alexis. Each wore the same expression as they turned to look at her, alert, on edge. What? She glanced from one to another. What's happened now? She held back the words. When can I go home? We're leaving. Alexis's tone was calm, steady, but Stasia felt the restlessness in the group, a need to be moving. All of you? The commander was giving up. Oh, how she longed for this to be true. A smaller group only. I will lead it. Some of my men will accompany me. We'll convey the more seriously hurt to one of the larger settlements, where they can receive better care. Some will travel on to Dragon's Keep with us. Dragon's Keep? The ruler's residence, said Mattis. You'll be going there, and we must leave soon. Stasia was without words. This was a joke, surely. Why would she go anywhere? She wasn't injured or in need of care. And what about... A sound came to her ears. A little dog barking. She must be just outside the door. Oh, gods. We live here, Flip and me. This is our home, our forest. I can't go... There's no time for this. There was a harder edge to Alexis's voice now. You will come with us. Willingly, I hope. I don't want to have to restrain you. Come freely, and you can make yourself useful on the way. As for why, the ruler wants to speak to you. And when she simply stared at him, disbelieving, he added, Lady Elisabetta has requested your presence at court. It's my job to get you there safely. Now gather whatever you need, and be quick about it. Gather what you need. But her things were all up at the cottage. Her clothes, her hair comb, the precious object she had used for that last ritual, the painting of the mother. She made herself breathe, swallowed the scream of protest that was building inside her. I ran down here to help when I saw the fire. I brought nothing but the clothes I'm wearing. Don't make me come with you. Don't make me leave the forest. The baker will also be travelling with us, Mattis said. She will not come back here beforehand. Take what you need from her things. You might gather some necessities for her also. Hurry, please. He turned to the other men. Go ahead. I'll meet you down at the gate. As soon as the door was opened, Flip came barreling in, ending the charge with a wild leap into Stasia's arms. I don't... Stasia stumbled over her words, clutching the little dog to her chest. What?
Go on, Pavel, Metis said. I'll bring Stasia.
And when Pavel had followed Alexis out, shutting the door behind him, the big man said, Your friend Lucas will be with us. His burns need expert attention. He might welcome your support on the journey. And when Stasia gave no answer but an indrawn breath, he added, You need to come. You spoke out earlier, drew the commander's attention, and not in a good way. Now, can I help you gather what you need? By the time we walk to the gate, they'll be ready to leave. Dimly, Stasia remembered that the commander had now established his headquarters further away. Perhaps they were leaving early to avoid some sort of scene. But a whole group of riders, horses and carts, those would be hard to overlook unless a man was sunk very deep in sleep. Lucas. They were taking Lucas. Stasia, we must go. She set Flip down. Found a bag, stuffed some items in. Irina's comb, some clean rags, kept for dealing with the monthly bleeding. Hers was due soon. She could only hope she would not have to deal with it until after they reached this place. She chose sparingly from Irina's clothing. For herself, a night robe, a shawl, a gown that would be too short and uncomfortably tight, but that hardly mattered. If they'd let her go home first, she could have packed her spare tunic and trousers, twins to the ones she was wearing, but they were out of reach, and she would not fit into Thomas's things, even if she could have made herself take them. For Irina, she snatched up some items the baker wore often, and one precious item, Irina's wedding ring, which she did not wear while baking. It was on its shelf beside the bed. A narrow silver band, memory of a husband who had perished from a winter ague when Thomas was only an infant. If Stasia had still had her owl, she could have strung the ring on the same cord for safekeeping. Oh, that amber owl! What would the commander do with it? The thought of it in his hands horrified her. But she could not ask about it. These men were in a rush and would not listen. She slipped Irina's ring into her tunic pocket, willing it to stay there. A knife would have been useful. Her own had been left in the cottage when she rushed out to the fire, but she could not take one from Irina's kitchen supplies without Mattis noticing, and she was sure he wouldn't let her keep it. Flip had jumped up on the shelf bed and was watching solemnly. There was no time to exchange any messages with the little dog. It might have been better if Flip had arrived in bird form, but it was too late for that now. The men had seen a dog, and that meant no more changing while she travelled with them. Hartwood. They were leaving Hartwood. That knowledge was a cold stone inside Stasia, weighing her down, chilling her spirit. There was no escaping this. Not with Lucas in these people's grasp. The talk of better care might be all lies. Was it really likely there would be skilled healers in those other settlements? She'd been to Sweetwater. It was bigger than Hartwood Village, yes, but in other respects much the same. Not grand, not wealthy. Did they plan to leave Lucas and Irina there? They left the bakery. In the pre-dawn light, the settlement was eerily quiet. Though now Stasia could hear sounds of activity from the direction of Vidas's front gate. Mattis carried the bag. Stasia carried Flip. It felt like a walk to the scaffold, like the end of all good things, like a terrible dream, one that grew still more troubling when she saw two carts waiting, each with a pair of horses harnessed up. There was a tall and handsome creature she recognized, and a small contingent of mounted guards close by, Pavel among them. Alexis stood by the carts. In the early light, he looked especially grim. That should not surprise her.
There were injured men in the cart nearest to her, men who wore bandages around their heads, makeshift splints on their limbs, men who lay still, men who sat upright on the straw, backs against the cart's wooden sides. No sign of the person who had been tending to the injured last night. Who would look after them on the journey? Mattis gave a gentle push toward the second cart, which was also cushioned with straw. A man sat ready to drive, and there in the back, that figure lying in the straw, his head pillowed by a bag, was Lucas. He was a wan shadow of her hardy, smiling friend. His eyes were on her. His lips formed her name. Beside him in the cart was Irina. She sat slumped over, head bowed, fingers toying with a wisp of straw. A sad ghost. Her wrists were joined by a length of knotted cord, as if unrestrained. She might leap out of the cart or try to attack someone. Her russet hair, usually pinned up in a tidy roll, lay in a tangle across her shoulders. Did these men not understand that she had just lost her only child? Stasia hugged Flip closer for a moment, then lifted the dog into the cart. Mattis threw the bag in and helped Stasia up. As the sun crept up over the horizon and the convoy got underway, she settled next to Irina. Murmuring a greeting, to which the other woman made no response at all, Flip curled up beside Lucas as if to keep him warm. Stasia told herself she would not look back. She told herself she would not shed tears, even though her heart was breaking. But as dawn came nearer and the morning birds of Hartwood lifted their voices in celebration of the light, she gazed on the passing forest, knowing this was goodbye, perhaps forever. It had happened so fast. She hadn't said farewell. She hadn't gone to the fallen ancestor and spoken the right words. Maybe there were none. Could any words be deep enough for the hurt her own kind had inflicted on this ancient place, for the losses suffered by those that made it their home? Every living thing, from the great bear to the tiniest dragonfly, from the tall pine to the creeping moss, would suffer for no better reason than the greed of humankind. Every creature would, in time, feel as she did now, ripped from her home, set adrift on a journey she did not understand, powerless to stop this, breaking the solemn promise she had given when grandmother was on her deathbed. She needed to scream. The words of grief and fury were clamoring to be set free, but she could not let them out. Not with Lucas lying limp and defeated beside her, and Irina sunk deep in her own sorrow. Not with the injured guards in the other cart, perhaps in pain. It would only get worse with the jolting. She wished she could help them. But how? The wheels rolled on. The horse's hooves thudded on the pathway. The noise almost drowned Lucas's voice. Stasia, tell us a story. 11. Alexis. How long would it take for Rihard to realize he'd been told only part of the truth? How long before the man understood that asking Alexis to deal with things meant a loss of the control that mattered so badly to him? The journey was long, and it would be slow with carts. They'd need overnight stops along the way to sleep, to rest the horses, to pick up fresh supplies. If they forced the pace, the injured would suffer for it. Would Rihard send men after them? Might the commander jump on a horse and pursue them in person? Unlikely. Rihard had lost at least 8 of his guards in the fire. Several of the village men who had been working alongside them had been killed. Many of the survivors were weakened. They'd be unable to go on with the back-breaking work of tree-felling and hauling. Rihard had been too angry with the chaotic situation, too distraught at the unravelling of his plans to think the thing through. On the night of the fire,
The commander had been staying at the home of a certain accommodating woman who lived some distance from the main settlement. He'd learned late about the unfolding disaster and seemed all too ready to step back from both the flood of injured people and the voices of angry ones. After that scene in the village hall, Rihard had given his deputy some vague orders, then retreated, perhaps back to the woman in question. He'd known Alexis was planning a return to Dragon's Keep at some point, but he would not be happy when he woke to realize the convoy had already departed. He would be furious when he found Stasia gone as well, even though he'd seemed to understand why Lady Elisabetta would be interested in the girl. With luck, Rihard would simply wait for further communications, pushing neither his own men nor the local folk to keep working on the impossible task. In the aftermath of the fire, those capable of labor should be helping the farmer rebuild his barn. They should be assisting with care of the injured, not only men and women, but also farm stock. Rihard's deputies were capable men. If the fellow would leave the practical decisions to them, something might yet be salvaged from the sorry situation. But Alexis wouldn't be standing around in the vain hope Rihard would see sense. Stasia had spoken out boldly. It was clear she'd had no idea what a risk she was taking. There must be no repetition of that. They left two injured men at Sweetwater, where there were local women with healing skills. They travelled on to the larger settlement of Vita's Hope. No physician there either, but Alexis and Mattis went to talk to the town elders, while the rest of them, under Pavel's direction, made camp for the night. It turned out an old man who lived in the settlement had once been infirmarian in a religious order. Why he'd left the order, nobody said. Thrown out? Lost his faith? That didn't matter. They called him in to take a look at the injured men, and Alexis was impressed by his practical manner. The fellow knew how to treat burns and the aftermath of breathing in smoke. It was agreed that three of the remaining injured would stay in Vita's Hope, which meant the only invalids still with the convoy were Alexis's own men and the goat herd. The old man, still known as Father Michaelis, had recommended that Lucas also remain there, travel by cart being ill-advised for a man in his condition. The elders would have been happy to take him along with the others, but Lucas refused to stay behind unless Stasia, too, was staying. And Lady Elisabetta had demanded to see Stasia in person. The injured were taken away under the supervision of Father Michaelis. Stabling was found for the horses. The remaining members of the convoy settled in their camp, gathering by a small, well-contained fire to eat a hearty meal provided by the local people. At a certain point, Stasia drew Alexis aside, where others could not overhear. "What happens to Irina?" she asked straight out, not bothering with Master Alexis or other niceties. "You see how she is. Not burned or otherwise injured, but not herself. Could she stay in these people's care? She's broken." It was true. The woman was a shell of her former self. She did not speak. She did not want to eat or drink. She had no will for anything. He thought only Stasia's care was keeping the baker alive. The suggestion made perfect sense, but "It would be irresponsible of me to take you on this journey without another woman to accompany you." It sounded rather pompous. He saw that reflected on Stasia's face, but it was true. A young woman alone, travelling with so many men. It was wrong. And they were friends, weren't they, she and Irina? "She can be cared for at Dragon's Keep, well cared for. There is a court physician." Stasia's lips tightened. She made to say something, then stopped herself. "Speak up. Say what you want to say." "Irina is weighed down with grief. She's lost the last family she had in the world. Father Michaelis and the folk of this settlement would surely be a better choice than a court physician. Perhaps. Or she might bolt for home, despite her fragile state, thinking this place close enough. I cannot take that risk. Stasia looked at him. The light from the bonfire showed her features in gold and shadow, almost like a painting. An odd creature. He never knew what she would say next. She told stories on the way, many stories, to take the minds of her friends off their hardship. The noise from hooves and cartwheels had made it difficult to hear, but he'd noticed how the men tried to ride closer to that cart so they could listen. Oh, you care about her now? Her tone was unusually hard. A show of compassion. A pity that did not happen earlier, before you worked her to exhaustion. Before the fire, before she lost her only son. Briefly, Alexis was lost for words. He could have pointed out that it was not he who had forced Irina to bake for Rihard's men. He had not caused the fire. He had not suggested her son join the fight to extinguish it. Had he known about that, he would have tried to keep the boy away. He could have reminded Stasia that it was Rihard who had set the whole chain of disasters in action. He could... But no. Rihard had acted under the ruler's orders. Lady Elisabetta was responsible, though she could hardly have foreseen such a disastrous result. And he was Lady Elisabetta's advisor, her trusted senior advisor. They'd started out well, he and she, when Elisabetta was new to her position of authority and finding her feet. He could not say the same for more recent times. The baker will accompany us to Dragon's Keep, he said. If you're worried about her on the journey or about the goat herd, please draw your concerns to Mattis's attention. Stasia turned her back and walked away without a word, shoulders squared, head held high. He watched as she returned to Irina's side, in the warmth of the fire, but not too close, as she coaxed Irina to sip water, to nibble on a piece of bread. As she talked, made gestures. She was telling another story. He knew it. But over the sounds of the encampment, he could hear nothing. 12. Stasia. Vita's hope had meant noise, people, questions. But at least those folk had understood. They'd gone out of their way to help. Everyone knew what the commander had done in Hartwood, though the arrival of Alexis's party was the first they'd heard of the fire, and the first they'd seen of its terrible human cost. Father Michaelis had seemed a good soul, capable and skilled. She'd wished Lucas would stay there to be looked after properly. As for Irina, nobody really knew how to help her. Stasia kept trying, without much success. Stories calmed Irina, but there was no real sign that she understood them. Flip squeezed up close, licking her hands or face. Sometimes Irina stroked the dog, but her gaze was fixed on something beyond the camp, or the cart, or the changing land they had passed through. Beyond this day, this place. The road took them on. There were forested areas, lovely, green, full of life. Birds flew overhead, calling, but it was not Hartwood. It was not home. There were broad lakes, shining in the spring sun, sky captured in water, sheer magic, fields with cattle, sheep, sometimes goats, miles and miles of road. Other stops, other settlements, larger even than Vita's hope. Sometimes they were halted before they could ride in. Men in uniforms threw questions at Alexis, his purpose, his destination, the strange cargo of damaged people in his carts. He didn't offer much in the way of explanations, simply identified himself as the ruler's advisor and showed them some sort of token he wore around his neck. The men waved the convoy onward. That brought back a memory, the commander ripping off her amber owl as if it were his to take. He'd never given it back. Did he not understand? That had been like tearing away part of her very self, something that made her whole and strong and hopeful. And there'd been all those questions. She wished now that she hadn't told him and Alexis the story. How could men like that understand? Now every mile of the journey took her further from Hartwood, further from her home and haven, and further from the Amber Owl. Perhaps it had been burned in the fire. Wouldn't it have been in the commander's quarters? If only she could perform a ritual. Questions were building up inside her, more each day. Questions she couldn't ask Alexis or even Mattis. She learned a little from listening to the guards talk when they were camped for the night. Dragon's Keep was the ruler's home and headquarters. Not a house, a fortress. Many folk lived there, not only the ruler and her household, but guards and serving people too. There were stables, kennels for dogs, space for farm animals. Someone spoke of prisoners, but when they realized she could hear them, they started talking about something else. Dragon's Keep had a wall around it, and a settlement beyond the wall, and the whole thing was on the shore of a lake called Brightwater. That settlement would surely be bigger than any of those that they had passed through so far. Dragon's Keep would be full of people, full of voices and noises and activity. The idea of being stuck there turned her stomach. She wanted to be a hedgehog, able to roll into a ball and show only spikes to the world, or a fish, to dive into that lake and swim away, her ears open only to the swish and splash and bubble of water. Or a bird, a magpie perhaps, flying in and out at will, content within its own small tribe, unconcerned with the ways of humankind. Except, of course, for those rare and precious times when the two could help one another. When some kind of magic happened and they understood one another. The memory of that moment was still strong in her mind when she had lifted the bird free from the palings and felt it move in her hands, knowing it lived. Fly free, she thought. Live your life, friend. May Hartwood stand strong and stay safe for you and for your brothers and sisters. But as the cart wheels rumbled and squeaked, and as the passengers were jolted up and down, and as the long days passed, Hartwood was moving further and further away. Her moon bleeding started when they were still on the road. Awkward, even though she had those strips of linen in her pack. Alexis did stop the convoy from time to time during each day's journey, not only to rest the horses, but so folk could relieve themselves under trees or behind bushes or stone walls, or openly in the case of some of the men. At those times, Irina would get out of the cart, and the two of them would find a private spot together, not too far off. There would always be a guard keeping an eye on their general location, without actually looking at them. Should either of them have attempted an escape, they would soon have been halted. As things stood, Irina did not have the will to run, and Alexis must know Stasia would not try. She would not leave either of her friends behind. So, blood on her clothing, and several more days of bleeding to come. Somehow, she had to deal with it. They seldom stopped long enough to wash anything, though they'd spent two nights in Vita's Hope, and managed to get some items clean and dry. She'd have to talk to someone, ask for privacy, ask for an extra stop, maybe. She wasn't going to strip off any clothing while riding in the cart in full view. Mattis was probably the best choice. And the right time was now, with the convoy halted and the horses unharnessed and led to a nearby pond to drink. She helped Irina down off the cart and rummaged in her bag for what she needed. Where was Mattis? Ah, over there, near an old stone building that might once have been a pigsty. It looked as if he was on his own. Stasia whispered to Irina, "Wait here for me. I have to talk to Mattis." She remembered how Irina had helped her when she had her first bleeding at 12 years old. By then, grandmother was gone, and although Stasia had understood what the blood meant, she had struggled to cope with the mess and the awkwardness and the sore belly that came with it. Irina had explained everything calmly, helped her have a warm bath, provided a supply of the linen bindings and pads, and made sure she knew to use them.
Stasia wondered now if Irina had longed for a daughter of her own.
Mattis, may I speak to you privately?
She explained as best she could, using plain words rather than referring to women's troubles, as she'd heard some folk do. It felt strange to be telling him something she would have hesitated to tell Lucas.
We should be there the day after tomorrow, or the next day, Mattis said, as if such requests were not at all out of the ordinary. I'll make sure you aren't disturbed unduly. We can give you some linen bandages, if those will suit the purpose.
He scrutinized her, as if to judge whether she might suddenly faint or be sick.
You look a bit pale, he observed. More stops tomorrow, and for longer. There's a place we know, not so very far off, a farmhouse. You should be able to wash out a few things, and dry them by the fire, and take a bath if you want.
A pause.
I'm sorry. Awkward timing for you. Please make sure nobody watches us when we're attending to matters. We won't bolt, I can promise you that.
She glanced back. Irina was still waiting by the cart, with Flip in close attendance. Pavel, whose golden hair made him easy to recognize even at a distance, was helping Lucas down. The men had been good with Lucas, taking it in turns to make sure he relieved himself, stretched, walked a little. Pavel in particular had taken time to talk with him. For that she was grateful. Maybe, just maybe, when they reached Dragon's Keep with its court physician, Lucas could be made well again. Along with the burns, he bore many bruises, and that was not to mention the dimming of his brightness and the loss of his hope. His old self was all but gone. The commander had much to answer for.
And thank you, she made herself say. In another world, in another life, this man might have been a friend.
I'll need to mention it to Alexis, Mattis said. Not the men. They'll be glad of a slower pace, as will the horses. And never mind the reason for it.
There was a stream not too far off, and plenty of cover. Mattis himself kept watch while the two women performed their basic ablutions. Flip disappeared into the bushes. With luck, she would catch herself a meal of some kind. For a little, Irina watched as Stasia struggled with the linen strips. Then abruptly, her trance-like state broke.
Not like that, Stasia. Here, let me help.
The baker's fingers shook a little as she folded and twisted and knotted the cloth, then helped Stasia make the necessary adjustments to her clothing. Today she was wearing the borrowed too-small gown. There was a blood stain on the skirt. Irina ripped off a short length of linen, dipped it into the stream, and sponged the stain hard until the mark was all but invisible. Now her hands were steady.
There, she said. Not perfect, but it'll do. If anyone asks, tell them you slipped in the mud.
Stasia had tears in her eyes. She had thought her friend lost forever in the shadow of her grief.
Thank you, Irina.
Mattis said they might stop for a while at a farm, so we can get things washed and dried. Irina looked her up and down. Your hair could do with a good wash, she said.
And isn't that gown one of mine?
Stasia didn't want to think of that rushed departure, the hasty stuffing of items in her bag, the leaving of Hartwood without any sort of farewell. She didn't want to think of Thomas, let alone speak of him, before Irina was ready.
I didn't get the chance to go home that night, she said. They told me to borrow what I needed and take some things for you.
Oh, how could she have forgotten something so important, so vital? Something as precious to Irina as the Amber Owl was to her, if not for the same reason.
Oh, what?
I have something else of yours, in my bag. Let me find it for you.
She knew exactly where it was.
Right at the bottom, wrapped in a beautiful silk scarf she'd seen Irina wearing on special occasions, a splendour of swirling blue and green and violet that made the baker look like a lovely flower. I should have given you this earlier. Here. She put the ring in Irina's hand. Irina slipped the ring on her finger, closed her eyes, stood there perfectly still for a few moments, then put her face in her hands